verse 12 tonight, Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 12. I was thinking as I got up to speak, what an interesting thing a day is in my life. I got up this morning and worked 3 hours on church work, made me a little office in a motel room in Wichita, Kansas this morning, planned some of the program of the church, studied the Sunday school lesson for tonight, called long distance and dictated the Sunday school lesson, then called long distance and broadcast live over the telephone, and then finally took time to eat a bite, about 9:15, and then preached a sermon, and then had 3 conferences with preachers who had problems, and then rushed to the airport, and then studied my Bible all the way for tonight on the airplane. Got home at 5:25 and left at 5:30. And I've had a teachers and officers meeting, ordained 3 preachers, and now for the midweek service. And it's very interesting to say the least. Sometimes I meet me on the street and say, "Hi, Jack." Says, "Hi, Hiles. How you doing?" But I think we have tonight some of the most important things to say about the book of Proverbs. And we start with verse 12. And what number is it? What? Well, 170 is the number. We're on our 170th truth we've discussed in the book of Proverbs thus far. And, of course, it's basically written to the youth, but anything that's written to young people is applicable to any age. And we come tonight to discuss verse 12 of Proverbs chapter 27. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, teach us the Word of God and help us to be better people because we've come. Teach us character and integrity and decency. And help our young people tonight to learn, in Jesus' name, amen. I was talking to a preacher today whose son and daughter neither have turned out very well. And the preacher said to me something like this. He said, "I would give anything if my 2 children could have been reared in your church." That's strange for a preacher to say that, isn't it? That he would give anything. Now, his boy is grown in the services. Drinking liquor, preacher's boy, living in sin, not even going to church. His daughter has married from all visible evidence outside the will of God. And young people, what we're trying to do, we're trying to keep you from doing that. I, along with your parents and friends and school teachers and Sunday school teachers and departmental superintendents, we're trying to give you some truths that will help you become your fullest and do your best for God and be clean and upright and pure and what you ought to be. And certainly it's a fitting thing, I think, for us to pause to ordain two of our young men. Brother Colston, you're young, but you're not one of our teenage products and child products, but to ordain 2 of our young men who've been reared all of their lives here at First Baptist Church. It's certainly encouraging, is it not, to keep on teaching and keep on working and keep on preaching and keep on visiting and keep on praying that God will bring others to the place of complete dedication as he has the Loscher boys and many other of our young people. And so tonight we have already seen, many of us have, the finished product of our labors, and then we go back again into the kitchen and try to stir up some more and cook up some more and try to instill in the younger ones who are still growing up the same thing we tried to teach those whom we ordained this evening. The first thing we learn is in verse 12, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." I just have simply written beside that, number 170, write it down, "Hide from sin before it comes." Hide from sin before it comes. Oh, I think one of the most dangerous statements that we like to make, and aren't we guilty of making such casual statements? We have cute little things we like to say. For example, a fellow says, "Well, there's 2 things I just don't like to argue about. One's religion, the other's politics." Well, now, we like to make cute little statements like that, and people oftentimes say, "Well, if we withdraw ourselves from the world, how are we going to be able to help the world?" That's a dangerous statement to make to a young person. A dangerous statement to make. There's a time to turn someone loose. Listen. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was 30 years old before he got turned loose on the world. I'm not saying that everybody ought to be 30, But I'm saying that a teenager is not ready yet. 99 times out of 100 is not ready yet to go out and influence the world. It's the job of a teenager to get influence. It's the job of a young person to get influence. Look, now hear me carefully, and don't get mad at me. If this were to apply to anybody, I don't know anybody to apply to, but don't get mad at me. But listen carefully, I'm trying to help you. If David Loser had gone to a state school, he would have not been ordained to preach tonight. Did you hear what I said? If Larry Loser, if God had called him to preach, and Larry said, I'm going to go to a state school, he would not have been ordained to preach tonight. I'm simply saying that while we're preparing ourselves for our life's work, we ought to put ourselves in the environment where we can be helped and not necessarily helped. It is important in the formative years of life, and I say formative years, I mean 21, 22 years of age. I mean it is important that we not think we're too strong. More Christians have fallen by the wayside because they thought they could help others too soon. And they found themselves, listen, I know many, many, many a young man, young lady, whom God had called or whom God was going to use in a mighty way, who withdrew themselves from the best help they could get. And in so doing, they dropped off the wayside, never became a preacher, never became what God the fullest. Now look, if you don't agree with me, okay, go ahead and let your boy and girl do what you want to do. But listen, I'm not trying to argue with you. I hope you're right. I hope they turn out to be the very best in the world if you don't follow my advice. God knows I don't want anybody to go bad or not to fulfill their fullest just so I can say I was right. But let me say this. I've been preaching a long time, and I've seen a lot of them come and go. A lot of them come and go. So you look down the road, young friend, and if you see evil coming, don't you think you can buck up against that evil? A fellow says, well, he said, here's where I quit smoking. He said, I quit smoking, and I went back home, and I got that packet of cigarettes, and I set them up there, and I took one of them out and put it on the top, and I said, I'm going to lick you looking at you. For every one fellow that quit that way, 1,000 went back. 1,000 went back. Brother, the best way to quit smoking is not hang around smoke. The best way to quit drinking is not hang around liquor. What do you say? We can't withdraw ourselves from the world. We can, but we're strong enough. Here's a fellow has stomach surgery, has 2/3 of his stomach cut out. Does he get up the first day in the hospital after the operation, go back to work, and eat French fried onion rings? No, sir. Now, he's got to go back to work sooner or later, but brother, he stays in that intensive care ward for a while. And then he goes and stays in the hospital and eats and drinks milk and eats Pablum for a while and has a bland diet. And then he goes home and he has a little slower schedule. And why, it's weeks or months before he gets back to normal. The same thing's true with a young person. A young person ought to be strengthened, stay in the intensive care ward for a while, and then stay in the hospital for a while, and then hang around for a while, and then go to a good Christian school that'll influence them properly, and stay around good Christian people that'll be a good influence. And a young person, not normally, a young person's not ready to influence, but to be influenced. Now, here's the way it is. David and Larry are going to school. They're getting the influence of one of the finest Christian schools in the world. Now they go out on the weekend and they're giving out. You see how the transition is coming? For a long time, they've been just taking in and being nurtured and being helped. Now they're helping a little bit, but being helped most of the time. And then it'll gradually come the other way. For example, take in the case of a child and its parents. Take my mother. My mother cared for me. She cooked for me. She provided for me. The day came when I got me a little job making a few dollars a week, a paper route. And then I pitched in a little bit, and Mother pitched in the most. And then gradually, it's been turning the other way. So now I pitch in the most, you see. And she won't get a paper out. I don't know why, but she just refuses to do it. It's the least she can do. But that's the way life is. Now, a young person's that way. A young person ought to gain and receive and breathe in and take in. And when you see evil coming down the road, don't walk right through the evil. The Bible says, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself from it. Say, well, brother, can't hide yourself. The Bible says you can. The Bible said a wise man, a prudent man does it, hides himself from it. Listen, more people go back in the world. Talk about folks not sticking, Christians going back in the world and dropping off. Here's why they do it. They think they can run with the same old crowd, hang around the same old joint, go go to work with the same old people, have the same old carpool, have the same old crowd, and the same old friends. If you're a good Christian, they think they're going to go back and win every one of their friends to Christ, and they find out to their dismay, sooner or later, their friends drag them back from whence they came. Young people, hear me, hear me. Just about gotten the place where I feel that a young person, all until he's 21 years old at least, he ought to keep himself sheltered. Now, you say, I don't agree with that. Okay, you trot out your young folks you turned out, and I'll trot out mine. Brother, I dare you to find a church in the world that has turned out the group of young people First Baptist Church has turned out. I told you 7 years ago, next June, we had a big meeting of the church, and folks asked me question after question about our program. I told you 7 years ago, next June, when folks said to me, well, what are you going to do with the young people? I said, give me a generation of them and I'll show you. Just give us a shot. Many of you were there at that meeting that night. And we laid out 15 or 16 different points about our youth program and what we'd do with our young people. And I said, just give me a chance. Just give me a chance. Okay, the chance has been given. Look at them. Look at them. They go out in the world. They stand the test. But they've got to get strong enough before they go. And so hide from sin. All right, now I'm just going to make an observation about verses 15 and 16, please. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. The next statement is tremendous. Whosoever hideth her, hideth the wind. Huh? Think about that. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Whosoever hideth her, hideth the wind. Now, it doesn't say bag of wind, but I'm sure in the original that's what it says. Write it down. Be a good-natured wife. Be a good-natured wife. Now, once again, why did Solomon spend so much time talking about the wife being good-natured? Because the wife is the secret to the home. For a wife, the home is her vocation. For the husband, it's his avocation. I am a preacher. That's my vocation. My wife is a housewife. That's her vocation. You see what I mean? So consequently, with her, it's her life. With me, it's a place where I live. It's a place where I love. It's a place where we rear our children. But my vocation in life is being a preacher or a pastor. But with her, it is her vocation to be at home and to be the housewife. That means that listen, if a home is unhappy, now please misunderstand, don't misunderstand me. If a home is unhappy, usually it's more the wife's fault than the man. I didn't say always, I said usually. Here's the reason. A man's only home 4 or 5 hours a day, sometimes less than that. Woman's home all the time. Now, sometimes it's unbearable. I know that's true, and sometimes it's the man's fault, all of men. I'm not saying, but I'm saying that the wise man said the woman ought not to be content. Now, here's one reason. Did you know, now please, ladies, have mercy on me. Did you know that men can get along with each other easier than ladies? Now, you may not believe that, but it's so. I have talked to officers in the Army, high-ranking officers, and they said that it for every one squabble they have in the Army, they have two or three in the wax or waves. Now, there's a reason for that. God made women more sensitive than men. He made them that way so they could be yielding and loving and kind to men. God made you more tender than men. And I think women by nature, it's easier for a woman to be a good Christian than a man. But on the other hand, a woman is changeable, more changeable, and the spirit of the home usually is determined by the woman. Now, you say, well, how? You just don't know the guy I've got. Now, that's the truth, and I never have been in your home. And it may be, in many cases, that your husband is intolerable to live with. But tell you what, you're there all the time. At least you can have a happy home while he's not there. You can give your kids some happiness. Look, let me ask you a question. If I can't get along with Brother Fisk, and I can't get along with Brother Terry, and I can't get along with Brother Hand, and I can't get along with Brother Colston, and I can't get along with Sandy Plopper, my secretary, and I can't get along with all the rest of the staff, I doubt if it's their fault. You see what I mean? I suspect it might be my fault more than theirs. Now, woman here,
If you can't get along with your husband, well, how do you get along with your children? Okay, then get along with them. I'm simply saying that the spirit of the home, the mother does the most of the rearing of the children. The mother does the most. She cooks the meals. She keeps the house. She cares for the home. She cleans the home. She washes the dishes. She puts the signs on the wall, like Christ is the head of this house, and a silent listener at every conversation, and a very present guest at every meal, and so forth. She puts all that. And so God is simply saying here, he's simply saying that, look, women, be good-natured. Be good-natured in the home. A fellow said to me today, he said, you know, he had a problem. And he said, my wife, he said, I love her, but everything I do, she interprets as how it affects her. He said, I can go play around the golf. And when I get home, my wife says, would you rather be with him than me? And he said, I looked at her and said, yeah. And if that's the kind of reception he got home, I don't blame him. I had to. Now, absolutely, ladies, be easy to live with. And men, too, of course. Man has no right to be an ogre. God didn't give you a right because Solomon didn't mention it here. That doesn't mean you can be an old devil, hard to get along with, and an ogre. Doesn't mean that at all. Everybody ought to do their best to be easy to get along with at home. All right. Now, then, the next number is verse 18. Number 172. Whoso keepeth the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof, so he that waiteth on his master shall be honored. This is a tremendous thing for everyone to learn, and that is, write it down, be loyal to your superiors. Be loyal to your superiors. I could not stress this enough. It says here, he that waiteth on his master shall be honored. Always. Now, everybody has superiors. Everybody. I guess everybody. Can you think of anybody that has no superiors? Anybody at all? I was thinking about the president, but he's harnessed for the Supreme Court, isn't he? And the Supreme Court, I guess they're the nearest boys in the world to having no superiors, except everybody I know is really a superior to them. Quality. But I mean as far as having somebody over them concerned. And I think that, by the way, just to give you a lesson on government, I think that's one of the greatest weaknesses of our government is that a Supreme Court justice appointed for life. I think one of the greatest weaknesses of our nation. And I think somebody that's smarter than I ought to rethink this, or if they can't, I will. But rethink this thing about appointing a Supreme Court justice for life. It's a serious and dangerous thing. But anyway, the truth is, nobody in this room lives without superiors. You have a boss. Well, your boss has a boss. Now, what it says here is this. When it says master, it means boss. You be loyal. I don't mean mostly loyal. I mean 100% loyal to your superiors. Never, never, never cast a reflection or a doubt in the minds of anybody toward those that are over you. Here's the reason. You're going to be a superior someday yourself. And you'll get the kind of loyalty you give. One reason why I think, and I don't mean to boost myself here because I've got a more false than you have, probably, but I'm saying, one reason I think that God's given me such wonderful people in the ministry, my wife will tell you that before I started pastoring, I was a faithful, loyal member to the church. I never missed a night of a week of going without going soul winning. I taught a Sunday school class. I was there. I mean, I was there. For the first 2 years after I was licensed to preach, first year and a half, I got a Sunday school class. I couldn't make a speech. And I got a Sunday school class and taught the class. And my wife tell you, I built the biggest class in the church. We were in charge of a training union. And we built the biggest youth training in the church that ever had. I got the RAs, like our, it's a boys' organization, sort of like Boy Scouts, and we grew like fire. I won 39 folks to Christ the last 6 months I was there, and all of them baptized, 39 folks I won to Christ were baptized. And I did my best to be a good member. And I think one reason God has given me such hard-working people is because I know what it is to be a member. And I tried to be a good follower. And nobody can be a superior unless he's a good follower. And so, look, your boss, the boss right above you,
Don't go undercutting him. I don't care if he's not what he ought to be. It matters not whether he's perfect or not. Don't go around to the folks on the job and undercut your boss. That's one of the smallest. And your teacher in school, children, young people, don't go around. It's not so cute to talk about don't like my teacher. I hear teenagers sometimes saying, oh, brother, she is the meanest lady in the school. There's no merit in that kind of popping off. Be loyal to your superiors. If they're your superiors, be 100% loyal. There's nothing in the world that'll be... And you say, why? First place, it'll help you. It'll help you. Look, God has a way of promoting people who promote people. God has a way of promoting people who promote people. Now, whether it's at work, at school, in the army, wherever it is, you be the kind of a loyal follower that God wants you to be. Here it is again. It says, he that waiteth on his master shall be honored. The next one is in verse 19, number 173. As in water, face answereth to face, so the heart of man to man. As in water. What does it mean? Did you ever go down to the creek or to the lake and look at yourself in the water? Now, you'll forgive me. I guess everybody's done this. At least I did it in all my crowd. I used to go down to the creek. We used to have, now, in Texas, a river is a creek, and a creek is a little rill. But we used to go fishing in the creek. I'm sorry, we were fishing, but swimming, too, in the creek. That was our swimming pool. And we'd put a tire, hang a tire on a rope over a limb. Anybody ever hang a tire on a rope over a limb? And anybody ever do that? And jump out, throw it, and jump out and grab it, swim across, you know, and so forth. And but one thing we'd do, we'd look, I've looked at the water, and you know, I'd go, like that, and see yourself, the reflection. Now, here's what it says here. As water face answers to face, so the heart of man to man. Now, I want you to write this down. Live so as you can answer to yourself. Live so as you can answer to yourself. Without going into politics, I like the campaign slogan, or one of the things that Mr. Goldwater used, when he said, in your heart, you know he's right. Now, I'm not getting the politics. I'm simply saying, listen, if in your heart you know you're doing right, that's all you need to answer to. Don't understand me. You've got to face God someday, and you ought to face your parents. But I'm saying in the final analysis, look, brother, when you look in the mirror and shave, you know what kind of person you are. When you go to bed at night and turn over and try to find sleep, and you talk with yourself, be the kind of a person that can look yourself square in the eye and, in a sense, say you did right today. Listen, to me, there is no reward on earth. Now, in heaven, of course, but there is no reward on earth. Why it is rewarding as to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, buddy, I think you did what was the right thing to do. Now that, brother, is reward. An honor, that's good. But I did what I'd rather do, young people. I'd rather graduate 125th on the list of the senior class and look in the mirror and say, buddy, you did it by yourself, than to graduate the valedictorian of the senior class. And while I took that honor, know in my heart, I stole questions and our answers from somebody else's paper. Now, you can go ahead and look at that principal and take that honor if you want to. But there's an honor bigger than that. That's the honor when you get away from that principal and away from that crowd and you get alone with yourself and you go to bed at night. The honor of yourself saying to you, you did right. You did right. It's funny how you remember things, isn't it? I recall a fellow in Greek class that cheated. He made straight A's.
Now, I made pretty good grades in Greek.
I made, in 4 semesters of Greek, I made 2 A's and 2 B's. But he made straight A's. He didn't crack a book. He wouldn't know alpha from omega. He'd think that was something for breakfast on the menu at a restaurant. He would not know. He couldn't give the Greek alphabet. But he cheated all the way through Greek. I've seen him looking at my paper on tests, and I'd be shocked. He's a preacher right now. A preacher right now. He got the award of being the best Greek student in class. I wouldn't have it. I wouldn't have it. I'd rather look at my 2 A's and 2 B's, or if they were C's or D's, I'd rather look at them and say, they're yours. They're yours. Now listen, dear friends. If nobody knows you sin, you know it. You know it. You know what you think. You know the motives of your heart. People may say, he or she, he's a good guy. Or isn't she a wonderful, delightful person? You may be. The truth is, that's not the ultimate of compliments. The ultimate of compliments is not for somebody to say, you're a nice person. I want to get to that in a minute. We live in a world that's so perverted concerning what nice is and what... Listen, boys, you can look in the mirror and say to yourself, you did right. You did right. In the final analysis, you've got to answer to yourself. Live so as you can answer to yourself. And as a man looks in the water and sees his face, when just you look at you, and you by yourself re-examine why you did what you did and what you did, you do it so as you can look at yourself and say, well, self, you didn't do too good a job, but you did what you thought was right. Some folks may not understand you, and some folks may think you did wrong, and some folks may criticize you, but you yourself know you did what you thought was the right thing to do. Brother, you do that, and you won't come out second place very often in the end. And God's got a way of, in the end, giving the reward to the person that does what's the right thing to do anyway. All right, let's go down to the next one. Verse 21, as the fining pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is a man to his praise. 21. Now, next number, write it down. Learn how to take praise. Learn how to take praise. Now, there are two wrong ways to take praise. Now, everybody gets bragged on. How many of you have ever told you that you look pretty? And why? You boys, I can understand that. I mean, that's easy to figure. But they bragged on you. You've been bragged on. Learn how to take it. There are two wrong ways. Said, listen, you're a fine person. Oh, well, I've always been like this. Oh, brother. Isn't that something? Or, I don't care if she is mine. I'm not bragging now. Then there's another way. It's worse than that. Somebody says, say, and they brag on you. And you say, I don't take any of the credit. I just give all the glory to him. To me, I think that's about as bad as the first. Learn how to take praise. In the first place, if somebody gives you praise, don't throw it back in their face. Accept it. Brag on, Brother Terry. Yeah, it's bragging.
Brother Hyatt, I think you look wonderful tonight.
Well, I just give the Lord all the glory. I really don't look wonderful. I just don't. Now, isn't that something? I mean, look, I'm taking his compliment and throwing it back in his face. Now then, do it again.
Brother Hyatt, I think you look really nice tonight. You look fine.
You know, I was thinking that myself. Now, that's the other extreme. Now, this is the way.
Well, you look sharp tonight. You look really fine.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. I really do. Coming from a man that dresses as nice as you, I appreciate that. Thank you. Now, isn't that, doesn't it, it's better than either one of the others? Huh? I mean, in the first place, if he thinks I look nice, okay, accept it. Truth is, whether you look nice or not, he thinks you do, and he's trying to be kind to you, and that most people say, well, I just so humble, I just don't think I'll take the praise. No, you're not. You're so proud that you're humble, you don't know what to do. Learn how to take praise graciously and gratefully. not boastingly, and neither not obnoxiously, learn how to take praise. When folks come by and say to me, I've heard preachers say, well, don't come and tell me you enjoyed my sermon. I don't mind folks telling me they enjoyed my sermon. Now, I haven't got time for every one of you to line up here tonight and after the service. But I'm saying it doesn't bother me. Now, the Lord knows that I give him the glory. It's all settled. I don't have to remind him of it or remind you of it all the time. It's all settled. The Lord knows I get enough slams to take a few compliments, and I need a few compliments to balance the others. And God knows what you need. And if a person comes up and says, I enjoyed your sermon, I say, thank you. I'm glad it was a blessing. Or something like that. And all across the country, they do it. And I think we ought to learn to accept praise. Accept it as a, don't turn it down. Suppose you gave me a gift and I threw it back at you. No, don't do that. Accept it. Don't feel worthy, but don't go around telling everybody how unworthy you are. So learn to accept praise. Verse 23 is the next one. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. Now, we discussed this before. I want to say it again. Don't write anything yet. I want to give you something to write in a minute. But I'm making an observation, too. Whatever you own, keep it up. If you own a dog, keep him bathed. If you own a cat, keep him clean. If you own a car, keep it washed. If you own a pair of shoes, keep them shined. If you own a suit, keep it pressed. If you own a white shirt, keep it clean. If you own a house, keep it cleaned. If you won't have a yard, keep it mowed. If you, whatever you own, keep it up. Keep it up. Keep it up. That's what God's saying here. Be diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. Whatever you have, that's one reason why God doesn't give us more oftentimes. We don't take care of what we do have. Now, I think it's a sin to waste things. I think it's a sin. Look, children, if you've got a bicycle, you are not going to have much character when you grow old if you don't keep that bicycle in good repair. You throw it around, keep it outside, let it get rained on, let it get rusty. You got a football, keep it outside, let it get rained on, let it crack, and you don't take care of your stuff, you won't be worth a dime when you grow up if you don't change that. Take care of what you have. Keep it right and keep it up. Listen, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variability, the shadow of turning. Everything we have that's good from God, whether it's a football or a ping pong paddle. Keep up your things. But now here's what I want you to write beside this. Do your best with what you have. This is number 170, what, 4? 5. Do your best with what you have. And then I want you to put a dash there, and I want you to write this beside it, same number. Compete only with your best. Compete only with your best. Do not compete with somebody else's best. Compete with your best. I know a preacher. Now let me go back. I said this to staff last week. I said, look, if we have enough money to do this, let's do this well. If we don't have enough money to do anything else, let's do what we have enough money to do with well and right. Whatever we do, if we have to mimeograph something I said, let's make it the best mimeographing we can put out. If we can afford to have it printed, let's make it the most attractive printed material we can put out. If we can afford to have it have pictures, let's have the best pictures we can. But whatever you do, whatever you have to do, do it the best you can. But look, don't match somebody else's best. Larry, don't try to be a Jack Hyatt. Now, I don't misunderstand, but there's a danger on the other side. There's a danger in trying hard not to be like anybody else. I think you ought to incorporate qualities from men whom you admire and talents and traits that you think you ought to incorporate in your life and ministry. But in the final analysis, don't you try to be as successful as I, more or less. You try to be the best Larry Loser you can be. I know a preacher who has resolved to be a Lee Robertson. So he got him a church, started his grade school, high school, junior high school, college, everything but a conservatory of music. I mean, he tried to do in 2 years or 3 years what Lee Robertson's done in 25 years. And he's fallen flat on his face. Why? Because he tried to be as successful as Lee Robertson. Look, all I want to be is the best Jack Hiles I can possibly be. Don't compete with me. Nope. Now, let me say again. I think we ought to copy from people traits and characteristics. But if somebody says, well, I'm going to build a church as big as First Baptist Church. Don't talk like that. Just say, I'm going to build the biggest church I can build. God may want you to build a bigger one than First Baptist. You see what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to say, don't try to be better than anybody else. Try to be the very best you can be. And that's what he's saying here. Now then, let's go to verse 3 of chapter 28, please. Verse 3 of chapter 28. A poor man that oppresseth the poor is like a sweeping rain which leaveth no food. Write this beside this one. Next, 176. Write it down. Be tolerant. Now, this is important. Be tolerant with folks who are now where you were. Be tolerant with folks who are now where you were. Need some help back in the back? Need some help? Sir? You need somebody? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were looking for somebody. All right. Be tolerant with people who are what you were. Let me say this now, teenagers especially. How many of you have a little brother or a little sister? Do you get exasperated with them? Do you? You know what's wrong with them? They're so much like you were when you were their age. You know that? Now, it is not Christian to say to your brother or sister, I just can't stand the way you do. You were that way. You were that way. In fact, I'd rather be like they are than like you are. A Pharisee. Looking down on them. Look, same thing's true to Christians. I know people in this church. Can't think of anybody's name right now, but I've heard it. It took them 15 years after smoking cigarettes. And a person comes to our church and if he hadn't quit smoking in 6 months, they're doubting the fellow's salvation. It took you 15 years. Look, learn to be tolerant with people who now are where you were. Younger brothers and sisters, younger Christians, children, you parents, be careful. You say, you just don't know anything. You never know what to do. Man, you didn't need them when you were that age. A lot of mothers have no patience with a child. It's a good thing your mother treated you a little better than you treat your children. No patience. Now, I think you ought to teach them what to do, but I'll say this. For example, you're just the most scatterbrained kid I ever saw. Yeah, because you reared her. She came in the world without any clothes on. Whatever she's wearing, you put on her. Be tolerant with people who are now where you were. Verse 4, please. They that forsake the law praise the wicked. But such as keep the law, contend with them. Now, I want you to write this down beside this verse. In moral matters, let it be known where you stand. In moral matters, let it be known where you stand. In moral matters, let it be known where you stand. Now, let me illustrate. I'm on an airplane. I was on an airplane today. I'm flying. Sitting in a seat next to the aisle. Stewardess comes by and says, would you like a magazine? Would you like Saturday Evening Post? Now, personally, I don't like Saturday Evening Post. I just haven't gotten used for it. I think they're becoming a scandal sheet. But I don't think it's a sin to read it, you see. I mean, if you take it, don't get it. I think Saturday Evening Post has sold its integrity for a buck, for a fast buck. I used to think it's the best magazine, and I'd say up to 5 years ago, probably it was one of the best three magazines on the market. But she says, you want a Saturday Evening Post? Now, what should I say? Should I tell her what I just told you? Huh? Of course not. I shouldn't say, no, I don't want no Saturday Evening Post. I know 5 years ago, they're a good magazine. I think they just sold out for a fact. Well, she didn't write the post. You see? Now, suppose she says, want a Saturday Evening Post? I said, no. She said, well, why? Should I tell her? No. Suppose she says, you want a drink of liquor? And I say, no, thank you. She says, why? Should I tell her? Yes. It's a moral issue. Don't go popping off about everything you agree, you believe, but you let it be known kindly on moral issues where you stand. For example, a stewardess came back and said, would you like, and you heard me say this before, a Bloody Mary? I'd never heard what a Bloody Mary was. And I said it kiddingly, though I did not know what. I said, I don't even know her. And just kiddingly. And she said, oh. And she started kidding. And she said, oh, you know what a Bloody Mary is? I said, I have no idea what a Bloody Mary is. She said, it's some kind of liquor. And I kidded. I said, well, I don't drink liquor or any other kind of poison. And laughed. And she laughed. And so forth. I don't drink coffee. And the thing that I say when folks ask me, why don't you drink coffee? I say, I don't drink coffee or beer either one. Just kidding, you know. Just kidding. Now, not in an obnoxious way. I don't say, well, I just quit because a fellow said he'd quit cigarettes. I'd quit coffee and the Lord delivered me from it. Nothing any worse than that. Unless you drink beer itself. I'm simply saying that if it's not a moral issue, don't express your opinion all the time. But if it's a moral issue, and then you let people know kindly where you stand. All right? Now down to verse 5, and this is an important one. Evil men understand not judgment. Boy, this is a great verse. Evil men understand not judgment, but they that seek the Lord understand all things. Now, right beside this, value character more than personality, and I want to talk about this for a minute. Value character more than personality. Write it down, and everybody look at me after you write it down, and I want to talk to you about it. We have the most perverted way of judging people in the world. We judge people mostly by their personality. When we say, she's a good person, what do we mean? We mean she's friendly and nice. And I think that's wonderful. Now, let me say this. A person who's a good person is one that has character. Now listen carefully now. Value personality, but value character above personality. And if you judge someone in your own heart, you judge whether they're a good person or not more by their character and their integrity than how their personality affects yours. Now, we're so prone, are we not? We're so prone to like somebody or dislike them on one basis, and that is, do we enjoy their personality? Now, I do not think a person ought to have a bad personality, and I think we ought to be the kind of people that have good personalities. And I think we ought to be friendly and open and nice and kind. But I think this, it is not as important as character. I'd rather a man walk in the bank and say nothing and pay his debt on time than walk in, speak to everybody, and not pay his debt on time. Hear what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? You value and judge people in your own heart by their character more than their personality. Now, I think you ought to judge them by their personality. I think a person ought to, but I'll say this. You're not very smart. Your brain is sort of tiny if you like people on the basis of how they act rather than what they are. Now, I'm not trying to cover up for people that don't act nicely. I think that people that have character usually will act nice, and they ought to act nice. But I'm saying the biggest thing about a person is what they are and not what they act like. You learn to value people. For example, if I say, you know, so-and-so is a good guy, you know what I mean? I mean he's honest, he's loyal, pays his debts, faithful, does right. That's what I mean. If I say so-and-so is a good guy, I don't mean he's friendly. Well, I think you ought to be friendly. I think it's a sin not to be friendly. But I'd rather a fellow be unfriendly. Let me think. If I can think of an example. Try to think of somebody that in public life. Oh, I think I will. I am a rabid follower of Senator Dirksen. A rabid follower. God multiply his tribe and let him live a long time. A rabid follower of Senator Dirksen. Wish you were 20 years younger right now. But you know what? Because he's not pretty, and he really is not pretty. Well, this is what I think about the issue. I think that Humphrey ought to take a ride in Dallas soon. Well, he really doesn't strike, you know, and he's the kind of fellow, oh, no. But here's Bobby Kennedy, and I'm not an admirer of Bobby Kennedy. You may be, I'm not. I mean, I'm not trying to, I like him. I hope he has good health and everything, but I'm just not an admirer of Bobby Kennedy. I did a lot of things I could say, but I better not. But he flashes that smile and that hair comes down over his forehead. And the character of our nation is revealed. The character of our nation is revealed. We'll vote for a smile before we'll vote for character. We'll vote for a friendly, I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying we would. We'll vote for a friendly, smiling crook before we'll vote for an unfriendly man of integrity and character and honesty. And the truth is, Nixon would have been president if television hadn't been invented. And nothing shows the bankruptcy of our nation anymore, and we're guilty, than the fact that we judge people on how nice and effervescent they are and not on their backbone, their character, their integrity, and their honesty, and their decency. And this is what that is, not his smile. Let us, as we observe people and look at people, let us observe their values on the value of their character and what they are. This is now, the other is important. I personally think that Senator Dirksen ought to get his esophagus straightened out. I think he'd get more mileage. But I like him. I like him. Okay. Verse 6. Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich. Write it down. Character is better than reputation. Not the same thing, but I'm talking now not about judging people. I'm talking now about what you are. You be more concerned about your character than your reputation. Young people, character will see you through, and nothing else will. Look, I know what I'm talking about. All across this country, people hear about me. They read my books. They hear about the church. They hear me on the radio. And let's suppose that they get the word out, boy, that Hiles is a real preacher. But the day is going to come when I've got to let them hear me. You see? Bless its heart. But anyway, I'd rather not have the reputation than tell the boy of this house, you hear him, and they hear me, and they say, is that him? But the main thing is to be a good preacher, not to have a reputation of being a good preacher. I'd rather be a good preacher than have a reputation of being a good preacher. I'd rather be a good person than have the reputation. It is infinitely more important to build in your soul integrity and character and honesty and to go around trying to let everybody know what you are. Listen, folks will find out what you are. You better be careful becoming what you ought to be. It'll come out. Don't you spend time. I know preachers spend time sending letters and brochures and saying, this is what he did and this is what he did. He's an outstanding evangelist. I never have done any of that. Man, my secretary sends out the A-write and say, would you give me a news release, and our news release says Jack, you used to say Jack Hiles, and as a young man in his early 30s. Now it says he's a worn out old fellow in his early 40s, but they give my age and the kids they got. Why? Because listen, what I am, they're going to find out. The thing to do is be sure that I've got it. If I've got it, they'll know it. If they think I've got it and I don't have it, they'll find that out too. So you be careful to build yourself. Be sure you got the goods. Publicity will take it. Listen. In God's own good time, God will promote you. You forget the promoting. You forget the publicizing. You be concerned about getting the goods. If you got the goods, God knows where you are. I said to some preachers yesterday, I said, now you be concerned. But a preacher said to me, well, I'm down here in a little old town, has 1,400 people. How can I do anything big for God? I said, you become what you want to be. God will put you in New York City someday. Not a matter of having an opportunity. It's a matter of what are you when you get to be what you ought to be. God knows where you are. He'll put you somewhere. The main thing is be sure your character is something. Be sure that your word means something. Be sure you're honest and decent and upright and walk straight and stand straight. That's the important thing. Character is more important than reputation. The last one we'll discuss is verse 7. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. Now, I don't have time to go into it. I wish I had time to go into all of these in the language, but I want to say this, and that is the word vagrant a good word? Vagrancy? Does that mean hanging around? Idle? All right, don't be a vagrant. I think that's what I'm trying to say. I didn't look this word up. But don't be a vagrant. Now, this is good for anybody. Nobody ought to ever sit around very much. Nobody ought to ever sit around very much. Young people, if you're going to buy a hamburger at a drive-in, you drive up there, order your hamburger, eat your hamburger, pay for your hamburger, and go home. If you go to a football game, you go to the game, sit in the stands, watch the game, don't go around hanging around the end zone or hanging around down underneath the stands with a gang of kids. You go sit and watch the game, eat your popcorn, eat your hot dog, drink your Coca-Cola. When the game's over, go home! Don't be a hang-arounder. You men. I drive down the street and see you got all, and I guess you know one of my pet peeves is a grown man that's got enough sense to have an enclosed car riding a motorcycle around town. This is one of my pet peeves. You motorcycle clubbers, you hot rodders, you 35-year-old men ought to be soaking your feet in liniment. Hanging around hot rodding. Listen, nobody ought to hang around. What did I say on the other day? Somebody said, they said, don't worry. Be too busy to worry in the daytime and too sleepy at night. And that's where you ought to be about trouble. Stay busy. Stay busy. You know, I haven't had to drink liquor all day. You know one reason? I haven't had time. I haven't had time to consider it. Listen. Young men, you'll do things that are immoral. You'll do things that are wrong. I'm talking about things that I could not even mention. Just sitting around. Hanging around. Keep your mind busy. Keep your body busy. Stay occupied. If somebody's right and says, idle mind is the devil's workshop, don't be a vagrant. Don't be a vagrant. If you'll give me your permission tonight, if you will, if you won't, I will go ahead and do it. Tonight is business meeting. Because we started late and had so much, if you'll give me your permission, we'll wait till next Wednesday night.